recording has now started. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Damon, and please now dial to Dom. Thank you ever so much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the PPSIA Working Group call on the 30th of September 2014. On the call today, we have Graham Bunton, Frank Mishlick, Tatiana Komsova, Theo Goetz, Sarah Wild, Chris Pelling, Darcy Sutherwell, Susan Kawaguchi, David Hughes, Osvaldo Novoa, Keith Kopfer-Schmidt, James Ladle, David Heasley, Ben Blumenthal, Todd Williams, Justin Macy, Jim Bykoff, Phil Corwin, Steve Metallitz, Val Sherman, Griffin Barnett, Stephanie Perrin, Paul McGrady, Vicky Schlecker, and Christina Rosette. We have apologies for Michaela Nalen, Christian Dawson, Suzanne Prosser, Holly Raich, Luke Soifer, Colton Samuels. And from staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Mary Wong, Amy Bivins, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. And I'm just checking if Don Blumenthal has joined us on the call yet. He has not. In that case, I'd like to hand it over to either Mary or Marika to start off.
Hello?
Don, is that you? This is Mary.
Yeah. I'm
okay,
here.
Well, welcome back, Don. Would you like to take over and start the call then?
Yes, might as well. He wasn't even back. I couldn't even get through in the first place today. Phone service hasn't reached the Midwest, I guess. As usual, please update your SOIs if there have been any changes since last week. Ken's focusing a lot more on transparency these days, so I'm making a stronger point of at least doing a reminder each week. I'm going to start off with a topic that, it shouldn't surprise anybody. Which is the whole issue of ground rules, particularly for electronic gizmos in Los Angeles. We got the proposals, we saw the suggestions in the interest of time, decided to present them. In retrospect, maybe could have spent some more time on softening language. As I mentioned online, I put in an exception for myself right off the bat. But again, maybe should have done some softening language and we didn't. I think we're ready to address the concerns. To be honest, at least for my part, some of the jumping ahead and throwing things out was a result of seeing what had been suggested and understanding the concerns. As Mike Pelage suggested, sometimes ICANN, and it's not limited to ICANN, isn't the best about having people focusing on the topic of a discussion. That's happened to all of us. I just thought it very important to at least present ways to make this program, the face-to-face pilot, as successful as possible. We will adjust. I've already said the phone issue is not an issue, but we'll be following up with what might be better called guidelines rather than rules, but at least we can maximize participation in the discussions and try to have people avoid distractions. Graham?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. This is Graham for the transcript. I just wanted to chime in briefly and say, people require technology for a number of reasons, but so long as we're sort of adhering to the spirit of that request, which is to say that we're all present and focused, Then, you know, you use what you need to use, but, you know, we're all there and working together. And I just think that's all we need to try and work towards. It doesn't need to sort of escalate into a larger deal than that. Thanks.
Absolutely agree. Christina.
Thanks. I agree with Graham. I guess, Don, you know, clearly it sounds as if you have something particular in mind in terms of what the further refinement is. So I would just ask that, to the extent that that's the case, that you share that with us now so that we don't finish this call and, you know, 8 hours from now we all get another email that has a further refinement, and then just this just turns into a big cycle.
Okay. You know, this, I appreciate the request. I mean, this has just kind of flown since yesterday. So I don't think we've had time to turn around and come up with anything formal. The idea behind the request or rules or whatever was just, and I'll use an example. I was in a 3-day face-to-face session last week, and more than once somebody just explicitly said, okay, I'll go back to reading my email now. That's something I think we'd like to avoid. But at this point, given the concerns, and I think they're valid concerns, about chatting with colleagues, doing private chats, even within the room, even within the room, I don't think we're going to be in a position to say any kind of electronic device is forbidden. We couldn't have said that anyway, but we will put out a document that just, again, as Graham said, the spirit, to just suggest that request people minimize use of the various toys for non-work group purposes. You know, we're not in a position to stroll the room and monitor like I used to be able to do when I was teaching. But, that there was, like Mary said in her note, there will be time set aside for people to catch up on email. And we're arranging breaks. But, and that's what it is. It'll be the spirit of trying to just focus on what we're doing, including when computers are used. Is that enough for now? Okay. I appreciate it. I flipped over to one of the private chats I just mentioned, so I didn't see your response. Okay. But with that, let's talk a bit about the face-to-face. The amount of back and forth and discussion of our possible issues has been great. I think I see a consensus toward a couple. Not a consensus. I think I see just opinions drifting toward the couple at the head of the list. So I think we still have a couple more days to continue taking responses, if necessary, to refine. If necessary, to refine questions as we go along. And just to answer Kathy's, yeah, I mean, there is till Friday, but we need to start putting things together. I see the trend now, but like I said, I'm not saying we're cutting it off at this point. Oh, Christina, I was not aware of that, the SOAC session. We'll work on that. Appreciate you bringing it up. And I'm apologizing here for my voice. It's obviously not real happy today. keep the comments coming in. At this point, I wanted to just kind of toss out if anybody, and ask if anybody has thoughts off the top about you haven't contributed in terms of topics, or again, if we can refine how we've defined some of them. And if I could ask folks to unmute if you're not speaking. Thank you. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve Metalitz. Just one point on the agenda, and just to clarify, I think this was discussed among the chairs yesterday. This item at 15:30 for discussed draft accreditation framework and related questions, tentative, that depends on receiving a document from the staff that were on our call a couple of weeks ago and that raised some issues about this. So do we have a deadline by which we'll know, if we have a document, a deadline by which it will be circulated to the group so that we'll be prepared for that discussion, and alternatively we will drop that agenda item?
Thanks. Glad you brought that up. Mary? Mary?
Hi. Hello? Can you hear me?
Now, yeah.
Sorry. I think the mute button was doing funny things with me. But we've been speaking to our colleagues on the Registrar Services team, and they are working on a document. And the hope is to have the document sent out to all of you by the end of this week, if not very definitely by early next week. So I'll touch base with them again probably tomorrow, but for now I think we are going to keep that item on the agenda on that basis. I hope this helps.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it'd be very useful to have that discussion, particularly To see how anything compares to what was brought up a few weeks ago. I'll add one more item here, just as a warning, a friendly warning, or whatever, I don't know if that's a bad word. This is a pilot. In a perfect world, we might have had, well, A number of planning issues have arisen as we've gone along. We're going to come up with these topics to be discussed, relatively late, relatively close to Los Angeles. We may reach out to working group members to at least lead the discussions, or at least get the discussion kicked off if there's something that might be in a particular person's or group's bailiwick. So that's just advance warning. We'll make the suggestions or make the requests once we come up with the final list. One of my periodic pauses to just see if there's any more thoughts or comments on this. This topic or Mary?
Thank you, Don. And not specific to the 10th October face-to-face meeting, but on the LA meeting proper, I think everyone will recall that in addition to this facilitated session on the Friday before, we will also have the usual scheduled working group meeting during the ICANN meeting itself, with the hope that the community will attend and give us feedback. The schedule that was published had the group meeting at, I believe, 10 a.m. on Wednesday. that was actually not the original request, so it's been switched back to the original request, and it will not appear on the formal schedule for a day or so because of the switch and them having to change it, but we wanted to let everybody know that the working group meeting is actually going to be still on Wednesday morning, the 15th of October, but from 8:15 to 9:45 a.m. And the reason for that is to avoid any clash with other sessions coming on at around 10 a.m., like name collision, ATRT2, and so forth, that we thought the group might be interested in. We'll follow up an email, but Don, this just came in to us, me and Marika, hot off the presses, so I thought I should raise it here.
Okay, appreciate it. So that's 8:15. Okay, so that's 8:15, which I think right there is a little bit off the original, but okay, that's good for planning, both for me and figuring out who else from PIR is going to cover a conflicting program that day. I hope I make it through here. Okay, last call here for face-to-face discussion. All right. I went back through all of the questions in F. And to be honest, I kind of lost focus on how long this list is. Is there any way we could bring up the question, the template grouping? Oh, cool. Magic. Thanks. We've done a lot of back and forth, which is inevitable in this process. I'd appreciate it if sorry. If any topics we have not discussed to your satisfaction jump out at you. You know, so many of them have kind of come up in the context of different ones, and perhaps I should have sent this out earlier, but it just occurred to me about 9 o'clock this morning that we've done a lot of discussion about reveal. Inevitably haven't done it in an orderly fashion. But we need to go back either now or in preparation for Los Angeles to really identify what we have not even tackled at all, if anything. I think certainly it's easy to say not sufficiently, not in depth. But is there anything we haven't even looked at? I don't think so. I'm curious about opinions to help us guide next week, face-to-face, Los Angeles, and beyond. And Kathy?
All right, let me mute in the background. This is Kathy, for the record.
Yeah, just for what it's worth, literally looking at one of the privacy pieces there when your hand came up, for what it's worth.
I know we've touched on a little bit of it. I wanted to look at question number 4, what safeguards must be put in place to ensure adequate protections for privacy and freedom of expression. one of the things we haven't discussed, perhaps, is some of the abuses of the process and whether what registrars might be seeing and others might be seeing in terms of different motivations for trying to get the underlying data. We're working with some, I'm not sure how we do it, but certainly one of the things we're seeing emerging is notice, that a number of registrars provide notice to the registrant and an opportunity to describe a situation perhaps before, in fact, certainly before the personal data or the organizational data is revealed, because there might be something, you know, to explain why that particular party is trying to, the third party is trying to get the data that might not be clear on its face. So I wanted to make sure, since we're seeing it evolving, that notice to the registrant is included in all of our discussions, because we're seeing that emerging as a pattern. So I'd like to build that into the templates that we're working with, and also see if we can discuss a little more, perhaps in L.A., some of the abuses we might be seeing or some of the protections, any additional protections that we might want to add. Thanks, Don.
Okay, appreciate it. Certainly anything we talk about here in terms of Los Angeles discussion is we're not limiting ourselves to face-to-face. The open meeting is also an option, as are any back channel always folks may find. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve Metalitz. I agree with Kathy that the notice issue is important. But I think in terms of the abuses, we also, and I'm just going to ask this again, we need more information on the volume of requests and the results of requests. We've been asking the providers for that for a couple of weeks. We've had several explanations of why they can't provide it or might find it difficult to provide, but that kind of leads to the question of what do we do in the absence of this data, and what I would be concerned about is, you know, policymaking by anecdote. When, you know, there are 30 million proxy registrations now. There certainly is some volume of requests. The providers are in a position to know, best position to know what the overall picture is. Any requester only knows what requests it has launched. And I think that would be useful, too, if we have data from the requester side. But we're still waiting for data from the provider side, and we may have to figure out how to act in the absence of data, since so far we have very little. But we're still hoping to see some on this. Thank you.
Thanks. James?
Thanks, Don. I think Steve, just to follow up on, or James speaking for the transcript, I think Steve hit it on the head. We need more data here. We certainly don't want to get into a situation where we're, creating far-reaching policies that really touches millions of people, millions of domain names in a very real and tangible way without, some metrics. And I think it's not just important to the making of intelligent policy, but it's also the best way to understand if you're actually doing good versus harm and measuring the success of this policy down the road and the success of the accreditation. I think that there are two sides of that data coin. I think that, certainly some provider statistics on would be useful on what we're seeing and what what our hit rate is, what our miss rate is. I set a note on this to the list recently, but it was fairly late, and I apologize for that. Most people probably haven't seen it. I think we also would benefit from some either individual organization statistics or even some industry-wide statistics on the users of these mechanisms on what their experiences are. For example, are there particular service providers that are more receptive, more responsive, response times are better, and some that are just, as I suspect, are just black holes for these types of requests. And I think that might be useful as well, and it would help us differentiate between the practices that we want to encourage and fold into these accreditation requirements, and then the practices that we want to be sure are left outside of these accreditation requirements. And then just on that note, I think that, the one thing that might be missing here from this list for Reveal, and I think it also to some extent applies to Relay, is some mechanism to authenticate and track the use of these mechanisms, Relay and Reveal, by the providers, so that we can ensure that if they are being abused, that someone's access to these mechanisms could be potentially revoked. And I think that that's an important consideration as possibly folds in under item number 4 about safeguards to ensure protection for privacy and freedom of expression, but also kind of freedom from harassment, I guess, would be the other side of that. So that's just my contribution. I think the data, doorway swings in both directions here. We need to get a true understanding of the scope of the problem so that we can really understand if we are making effective strides towards addressing it. Thanks.
Thanks, a lot there. I guess my question would be, as a follow-up, though, is, let me ask first, Kathy, is that a new hand?
Nope, sorry, old one, I'll take it down.
Okay, fair enough. I guess, first, how do we gather those statistics, particularly on the requester side, and to what extent are we going to be, Amy, are we drifting toward requiring some kind of reporting system by accredited providers? James?
Don, if I can just take a quick stab at addressing that.
That's what I expected.
Okay. So, the queue was empty. So, I think that we can put together provider statistics, at least the best we can. I know Graham noted some important limitations, but we can put together what we have, but that's not going to give a whole picture of the industry. That's going to give the picture of the people and providers who participate in the process and are probably falling towards the good guy end of the spectrum. So I don't know that it's going to be all that useful for separating out the types of practices that we want to explicitly exclude from these mechanisms. And for that, I think we're going to need some stats from the requesters of these services. You know, what are you seeing from the providers who don't respond, who don't, handle these mechanisms? You know, I call them black holes, you know, the folks, you just ring their phones and send emails, but nothing ever happens. And so in order to, I think, draw the line in the proper place between the good guys and the bad guys, and the good practices and the bad practices, probably the best way to say it, we need to understand what separates them. And I think we, the provider side of the equation, we can't provide data that shows where that line falls. Thanks.
I will just note how much this conversation is helping with my ideas for planning the tracking system that I'm working on designing for EIR. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. I think James is being modest as usual. I think it would be very useful to have information from the proxy privacy service provider associated with the world's largest domain name registrar. And so I'm looking forward to seeing the data that he's mentioning. It's obviously not going to provide a complete picture, but it'll certainly provide a very important data point on what kind of requests are being received and what percentage of them are being responded to positively. I mean, the other side of it is not that complicated. When a requester asks for disclosure from a privacy proxy service provider and gets nothing, I'm not sure what there is to report. I mean, I'm not sure what's hard to understand about that kind of problem area. That's obviously not where we want to be. But if there's data about what requests are coming into the largest provider, or some of the large providers, I think that that's useful in terms of figuring out what the normal flow is in this area. And, you know, we can always deal with edge cases and anecdotes, but I think it would be very helpful just to know what the kind of what the norm is. Let's put it that way. Thanks.
Okay. Any rebuttal? All right. Any comments from anybody else on this? Kathy?
Hi, Kathy. Just quickly supporting what we're hearing, which is that more data would be useful on the requests, on the responses, on the concerns. I don't know how we get that, but it sounds like that's what we're moving towards, is moving off of the anecdotes into measurable types of problems and situations that we can then respond to. But again, I don't know how we get there, and I certainly don't know how we get there before our Big Friday meeting. Thanks, Don.
Oh, no, you're thinking much shorter range than I was. No, this is for the work of the group, not necessarily for the work of not necessarily for the face to face. There's certainly anything from domains like proxy would be useful, but you know, that's one company's reporting, one company's categorization, so other methods, other systems would be useful to know about. I'm watching the chat, but I'll stay out of it right now. But, okay, never mind, I'll stay out of the chat. I've got to stick to my guns sometimes.
Don, this is Kieran. Some of us, I don't think, are on the chat. I'm not on the chat. Is it possible to maybe when you speak about what's going on in the chat, let us know what you're talking about? Thanks.
Well, there's just some back and forth. Randomly, Steve asking Graham a question, and I'm not sure. I didn't see the chat item that he's responding to. Oh. Well, he said we need to understand the volume from the requester side, and Steve was asking why. But to be honest, I thought I had heard that raised. I think from now on I will just not refer to the chat at all and leave it open for people to read it, afterwards. Just it'll bog things down pretty significantly, I think. To repeat the item, Stephanie?
Thanks, Don. I just wanted to pick up on something that Amar Alfadara mentioned in the chat. There is an issue as to what it is permissible for a provider to reveal in a jurisdiction that has data protection. And I'm not aware that it has been decided by case law yet, but we have to remember that the terms and conditions that we are sorting out in this working group will provide boundaries in terms of reasonable expectations. And they may or may not be accepted by data protection authorities, but it's just something we have to keep in mind, that if you have data protection law and you have a contract with your customer, it doesn't follow that you can break that at a low threshold. So we have to pay attention to that. Thanks. That's all I wanted to say.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, that the privacy frameworks are floating in the background on anything involving who is. Just one more set of issues to confuse us even more. All right, well, we'll continue to look at how to get data and how it how to make it meaningful, particularly when gathered from sources that may not be standardized in how they approach the issues. I've had a couple of background. Hang on. I've had a couple of background notes in response to my what haven't we covered. So I want to suggest what those might be and work on setting priorities. I think the one that's clearest to me that we only skimmed over is item A. And I guess my first question, is this even in... Well, no, I just answered my own question. But we will need, I think, to be discussing what would be in an accreditation program that would impose penalties if the provider acted improperly. Now, the question is there. I guess my first issue is that even in scope or is that an implementation issue? And I guess maybe because it's there, it suggests the bias that it's in scope, but I'm not sure about that. And then what would the safeguards or remedies be? And how much might we just wind up tracking what's done through other compliance standards, or will we... we'd be looking to come up with different approaches. I appreciate your confidence, Kathy. Go ahead.
I think that's valid to point out number eight. Not so much for, you know, if a provider acted improperly, but safeguards and remedies can protect the providers also from undue pressure. There's going to be a lot of pressure to disclose this data. And so, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, unfortunately, proxy privacy providers are stuck in the middle. So providing the incentives, the, you know, the incentives, rewards, for lack of a better word, in case, you know, to try to prevent undue or too easy publication. And we probably need to revise number eight to be both disclosure and publication, because we want safeguards, we want balances that protect against undue revealing of the data, and we've now defined revealing to be both disclosure and publication. So I don't see this so much as punishment, but setting up the balances of the system, the checks and balances, so that there's a process for reviewing if something's out of whack and, say, if a lot of undue pressure is coming in. I'm happy to clarify if anybody wants me to. Thanks.
No, I appreciate that. This is all helpful in just trying to scope out how to be using our time as we go forward. And maybe there's more there than than is on the surface, Susan.
I just want to bring a little bit of balance to the discussion. You know, yes, as use of proxy registration grows, and we're seeing it, you know, anywhere between 25% to 30% of the infringing domain registrations that we discover are proxies, there will be more of a demand, but that's because use of proxies are growing. But it's still, I'd have to go back and look, but I can't even remember the last time I requested a proxy, you know, a proxy reveal, basically, that I have requested that information, mainly because I need to get to it and I've got too much other work to do. But, you know, I would bet of the proxy registrations, at least for Facebook, but I do, you know, going back historically, you know, I did the same job for eBay. It was minimal. The requests were absolutely minimal. Maybe 1% of all proxy registrations have I ever asked for contact information. Now, I try to contact each and every one of those that we've determined that is infringing. But that's just relay. So, I'm a little bit concerned when we talk about, an abundance of requests, when I don't think that's a true picture. And maybe, other companies have different processes, but it takes time and lots of hands-on to request contact information when 99% of the time we just want to get a communication to that registrant. So if all of the proxy providers could reveal or could tell us how often they get a reveal request for, specific domain names, maybe you're getting 1,000 for one, I have no idea. But I just think it's really a small number. So we need to balance, the discussion based on that.
Well, I see your point, but let me just suggest that, as was mentioned in email, there are a lot of different abuse types. And the experience of one kind may not be reflected. Different kinds may have significantly different rates of reveal requests.
I agree, but I'm not sure.
Hang on, Susan. I'm just suggesting that your numbers may not be reflective of other kinds. And it would be nice to get data, but until we do, again, as Steve has suggested, I hesitate to act on the basis of anecdotal evidence. Go ahead.
And I thought you were done, so I apologize for interrupting you there. That was not my intent. So I agree. And, Facebook and eBay is a different animal than other companies. But, we also face, a large amount of infringement. And, I would just be surprised if the proxy providers are getting sort of authentic reveal requests. I can't, account for the crazies that just say, oh, I don't like this website, tell me who runs it. But, I would be very surprised if for other brands, for other issues, for law enforcement, that there's just this wholesale request if you compare the request number to the actual registration. And maybe we can maybe James can provide some of that information, or some of the other proxy providers could provide, how many requests they get per year. And I apologize, I was visiting family last week, so I missed this call, so maybe that was a discussion. But how many reveals are they actually getting, real reveals, not sort of crazy reveals, requests, compared to the number of registrations? And I have never asked for one. I have never asked for contact information for anything other than a .com.
I guarantee they're not limited to .coms.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's where the percentage is going to, the higher percentage may be. So I think we need to figure out how many, proxy registrations there are and how many requests, and then really take it. If 30% of all .com registrations are proxy registrations, and you're getting that, so let's pick that number. I think Steve said 30 million or something. Take that number, and the proxies are getting 30 million requests, I'd be really surprised.
Yeah, I think I appreciate that. I think we need to be careful about repeating stats, because I think they're getting a little conflated. And it's worth going back over the transcript and the chat just to make sure. But if nothing else, that can be the start of trying to come up with some numbers. Kieran?
sorry, I was on mute. Can you hear me?
Yep, gotcha.
Okay, sorry. I would have to agree with Susan, and, you know, coming from Mark Monitor's perspective, I think that we're slightly more, or sorry, slightly less anecdotal because we have such a large volume of clients kind of all across the board. We are dealing with, you know, requests to all sorts of entities all day. That's all we do. And the information that I have so far from our enforcement team is that we rarely, if ever, and no one has been able to say affirmatively that they've actually requested a disclosure or a publication. We are always, always requesting relay, always seeking communication, but through the privacy proxy provider itself, never saying, oh, please give us the contact information of this person so we can contact them directly. And then, of course, as, you know, as has been demonstrated with the Lowe's traffic that I participated in yesterday and today, on the flip side, we have not received any requests of disclosure, at least in the last 8 years that our manager in charge of the masking service has, you know, been working for us. He doesn't have one request of disclosure. So I would have to agree with Susan, and I would have to kind of object to the idea that that's merely anecdotal because, you know, we're one of the largest service providers in this area, and it's just not, it's simply not what we do. So I hope that's helpful. I don't know how easy it would be for me to get, you know, super concrete data on that, but that's, you know, the information that I have so far. And I've provided, you know, what I can to the list and hope to provide something more more concrete later. Thanks.
No, I appreciate that. And that would be very useful and certainly wouldn't be anecdotal. If you could, that'd be great. I guess, maybe wading in here a little bit, I guess I'm wondering where this discussion takes us, though. Is it suggesting we're spending too much time on reveal? That we shouldn't be looking at necessarily all these questions in depth because there isn't that much volume? To anybody? Vicki?
Hi, this is Vicki, and I'm with Recording Industry Association of America. I understand the call for data, and I understand that on the server side, or service provider side, there's been, you know, some chatter about difficulty in collecting the data. For RIAA and IFPI, I've put a call out to ask for the data. But putting that aside, I can tell you that from our perspective, it is vitally important to have the ability to get this information in our most egregious cases. We have always taken the position that we don't ask for this data if we have other avenues to deal with the problem. And we don't ask, you know, for data for gray area sites or fair use sites or stuff like that. So in response to your question, Don, I think we should move forward with thinking about some rules of the road, if you will, for legitimate cases where the information is required. I understand that there's abuse and edge cases, and we have to deal with those as well. But I would strongly suggest that we continue on the path of coming up with some reasonable rules of the road while we continue to collect the data.
Great. I appreciate it. To be honest, it's nice to hear a different voice from the usual cast of characters. So thanks for the contribution. Paul?
So my concern about the data collection and is that it's not from a requester side, is that it's not going to, first of all, we don't have access to the full universe of requesters, and so we can't draw any conclusions about real-life volume, you know, based upon that. It wouldn't even be fair to, you know, to collect a number and then multiply it by, you know, the number of, you know, trademarks in the world or some other number like that, because not everybody enforces at the same pace, depending on how sensitive their services are to consumers and the need to protect the consumers. So I'm concerned about that whatever data is collected from the requester side will not reflect real-world volumes. I'm also concerned that it won't reflect a real percentage of requests that are ignored, because at some point after you've been consistently ignored by some privacy proxy services and they don't respond at all, and you don't know why they're not responding other than that, you know, that they appear to just be protecting their customer, you quit writing to those people and you just, you know, do what you have to do to deal with the consumer confusion issue. And so, again, whatever data sets are collected, if we can collect data sets, will not reflect accurate volume, and they won't necessarily even reflect an accurate percentage of, you know, who among privacy proxy services responds and who doesn't. So for what it's worth, I still think it's interesting to have some numbers to think about from your requester side. I think it's also vital to have the similar set of numbers from the provider side, because you guys, again, don't maybe not have the entire universe of all providers, but you at least know from your side the provider side what it is that you're doing. But I think that we need to be careful that when we get data sets to look at, that we don't assume that they are, you know, somehow, you know, scientific in nature, and they were developed in a way that you would expect from statisticians who, you know, do this for a living. But, you know, they're not anecdotal maybe, but maybe they're hyper-anecdotal, and we should keep that in mind when digging through it. I'm sorry this comment was so long.
No problem at all. Good point. Lack of standard will. Yeah, lack of standardization is an issue. When it comes time to analyzing the data, once we get it, we're making use of it. Stephanie? Hello, Steph.
Thanks, Don. Sorry, I was headline tagged. I just wanted to sort of clarify that while I think I totally agree that we need more statistics, more reliable data about what's actually going on in the different segments of the street, that shouldn't interfere with us analytically deciding what is the right path for a lot of these processes. And so, in particular, with this discussion that's gone on in the chat as to whether we should just drop Reveal or continue discussing it, in my opinion, we need to discuss it because we need to set extremely high standards that are compliant with data protection law and establish that the due process, that somebody should have had umpteen relays before there is a reveal, and then we need to be clear about exactly who the data is getting revealed to and what you do with a non-compliant person. I mean, I think I'm worried that we are going in circles here. We've had a lot of good discussion on that. We just need to kind of continue and nail it down and possibly get better stats on what the nature of the problem is. I hope that isn't being redundant. I just wanted to jump in and say that.
No, that's fine. The trick is just how to get the stats. It's one of the tricks. Mary?
Don, I'll cede to Steve and go after him.
Yeah, this is Steve. Yes, I would just agree with Stephanie that we need to go ahead and try to set a standard, even if we don't have as good data as we would like. And I just point out, you know, the IPC made a pretty detailed proposal on this. The NCUC has made a pretty detailed proposal on this, so we're eager to see if the providers can help contribute to that process. I think that would really help move this forward, because we would have some concrete proposals on the table. Thanks.
Yeah. If I could just ask, I lost Steve's hand because some older ones were up. If you could take yours down if you've already spoken and don't want to again. Mary?
Thanks, Don. And my comment from the staff perspective was going to be fairly similar to what Stephanie and Steve just said. And listening to the conversations, and again, you know, data and statistics aside, as James was saying, you know, more data is always helpful, but as we proceed along, I just wanted to remind folks that, you know, this group has agreed on two types of review: disclosure to a third-party requester and publication in WHOIS. And for both of those types of reveal, there's really two categories of revealees, if you like, the third-party requesters that might be IP rights holders and law enforcement. If you look down at the last few questions in Category F, it seems to us that a combination of those questions and some of the latest group discussion might be leading us towards maybe discussing at least one proposal along the lines of where publication is concerned, that really is something that takes place by and large if the customer service is terminated and that termination occurs because of violation of the provider's terms of service. And so we offer that up as a reminder that these are sort of underlying assumptions, if you like, behind the last three questions, and maybe this is one specific angle that the group can think of going forward in the next couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thanks. Real quickly, Kathy, because my thing says 10:15.
Oh, right, we're at 11 o'clock.
Oh.
Mary's comment confuses me because every time we go back to publication, we leave disclosure, and I still don't think in any way we've nailed down disclosure to third parties. So I love not jumping back and forth. I love kind of picking it and zeroing in. But what I gathered from today is that Relay is where the action is at. And I'd love more data. I'd love more data from those requesting relays and reveals. And I'd love more, you know, I'm still with James. I think we still need some more data. Otherwise, we're deciding on anecdotes. Sorry to keep everybody past time. Thanks.
No, my computer says 11. Thanks for your time. I think a really good discussion. I had a couple of other points in F that I'm not sure we've discussed. I will send those out an email. Talk to you on the list and on the phone next Tuesday. So long.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have fun. Good luck. We can take care.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much, Damon. You may now stop the recordings and have a great day. Goodbye.